Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're talking about Pringles.
Oh, yes. And there is much excite in the virtual Savor podcast studio right now.
There is. We try not to do like too many brand related episodes because I don't know. I feel like that would be weird.
Yeah.
You know, like. Yeah. We're certainly not sponsored by any of these people. Certainly not. Gosh.
No. Certainly. Oh. They've got standards.
But they can just be so much fun. Like just the stories and a carrot is also really cool and fascinating in a whole lot of ways. But man, like some of the manufacturing processes that these people come up with is so amazing. And
yeah. Yeah. And I mean, there's just something fun about pop culture touchstones that we can all relate to with these brands. Or, you know, most of us can relate to.
Sure.
This one's fun. It's got a lot of science and a weird history. Very strange products that we're going to talk about.
And I've
never really been the biggest Pringles fan. I can't remember the last time I had Pringles. It was probably middle school.
Oh, really? Wow. Huh.
Yeah. Well, you know I'm not a big snacker. But they've been on my mind ever since John Oliver, he just, like at the end of December 2020, he goaded the company into revealing the body of the Pringles mascot, Julius Pringle, by the way. And this was after he'd already called them out before, and a bunch of fans, of course, answered his call and imagined the body in all kinds of ways. You can fill in the blank there.
Yeah. Or Google if you so choose. That's up to you.
Yes. There's a lot of amazing art, I've got to say.
Yeah.
And when I was a kid, I do remember the commercial very well and the slogan very well. Mm-hmm. And in middle school, we often used it in an immature, poor taste joke about serial killers. Once you pop, you just can't stop.
Yeah. We had that joke.
Yeah. Well, that makes me feel better. I'm not alone in my terrible middle school poor taste humor.
Oh, not at all. That's pretty much most middle schoolers everywhere. Going right up through mm-hmm. adults. Yeah.
To our current moment.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And I think I've only ever had two flavors.
The
flavor list is really impressive. I'm just going to go ahead and put that. The spoiler alert.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. There have been a lot of one-off flavors over the years. And I didn't even, I don't know, like there were so many interesting things to cover that all of the wacky flavors actually fell down on the list further than it normally would with a product mm-hmm. like this. And so so I don't have as an exhaustive of a list as I would like to have, but they've had some wacky ones. Yeah.
I think we
ate a few different ones on Snack Stuff back in the day. That Facebook Live thing where Annie filmed Ben Bolin and I eating weird snacks.
Our jobs are so strange.
You say from your closet during a pandemic recording audio.
Yes. Well, I mean, we were recording you two eating snacks in the middle of the office in the middle of the day.
It wasn't not weird. I'm not arguing that it was weird.
Yes.
Yeah. I feel like I've brought Pringles to a karaoke event, at least. I don't know, like in my like grabbing of snacks occasionally, like a Pringles can, I'm like, yeah, this sounds good. I want a Pringle. It's so crunchy. I won't say like it's not I don't really buy snacks aside from popcorn. I do buy popcorn to keep in the house. But if I'm going to a party back when we went to parties, that would be the thing.
Yeah, that's the snack you bring, I see.
It's not usually a snack that I would bring, but usually I'm that jerk who shows up with, like, baby carrots and, like, some hummus, and I'm like, hey, everyone, I brought a vegetable. And, like, somewhere in the back of my head, it's just, like Homer being like, you don't make friends with salad, Lisa.
Well, I've been rewatching old Seinfeld episodes lately, so it's just, that's a topic of conversation a lot on that show, of like the having to bring a snack, mm-hmm. and what do you bring, having to bring a drink, and why is this a thing? But anyway, okay, before we get to our question, yes, just to reiterate, not a sponsor.
No.
Just wanted to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, let's get to our question. Pringles. What are they?
Well, that is a surprisingly controversial question, legally speaking. Pringles are a brand of potato-based snack chips that are just about perfectly uniform in thickness, size, and shape, and were engineered to stay crispy and unbroken, stacked in a specially designed sealed can during transit from the factory to your face.
That sounds, like, when you put it that way, it sounds so, like, sci-fi-y.
I did just feel a little bit like one of those announcers in one of those, like, 50s infomercials.
Yeah.
Talking
I got that
about,
vibe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay. So, like, traditional potato chips, called potato crisps throughout the rest of the English-speaking world, are made by taking thin slices of potato and deep frying them. And, you know, like, the results are delicious, sure, but even the most carefully cut and fried chips from even the most carefully grown potatoes are going to vary in size and shape and, like, starch content and oil content a little bit. They're also hard but fragile. Sealing them in a bag with a puff of air for cushion helps protect them from outside dangers, but not from each other.
Ooh, dangerous inside that bag of chips.
It is. But Pringles are science chips. They're made not just from potatoes, but from a batter or a dough of dehydrated potato flakes plus cooked rice, wheat, corn, and some flavorings and other stuff. And they are made by pressing and rolling that dough out into this long, flat sheet that the individual chips are cut cleanly out of with a machine in huge batches. A machine pulls away the excess from the sheet in one big piece for reprocessing. The individual chips are then conveyed into a press mold that gives them their shape, and then they're flash fried on that mold, dried, sprayed with flavoring powder, and flipped onto a growing stack. And then each stack is canned and sealed when it's the right height of chips.
Yeah. And this, you can find videos of this. It's amazing.
It's so
stunning.
Cool. Oh, yeah. How It's Made did an episode. And it's, I highly recommend looking it up. It's really fun. Yeah. I guess for specific definition of the word fun.
I think it's kind of mesmerizing. I was just looking at it like, ooh.
There is something like a little bit like sort of like fugue inducing to watching machinery like that work. It is very peaceful. that shape that they get pressed into is really important. It's called a hyperbolic paraboloid, often called a saddle, because that's what it looks like. And if you look at it, you'll notice it has these two curves. Long ways, it curves up. And across the middle, it curves down. And this creates a balance of forces. The material along the long concave curve is stretched in tension. And the material along the short convex curve is squished or squeezed in compression. So even though these chips are very thin and the material itself is fragile, they're also very stiff due to that balance. Like it resists fault lines, which lead to cracks, which lead to broken chips. And this shape is great at resisting breakage, even under compression, which helps like the chips at the bottom of the can resist buckling under the weight of the ones above them. And it means that when you do break the chip by biting into it, you're going to get a really satisfying noise.
Yes.
Yes.
Good crunch.
Good crunch. And I have not used in this description the mathiest words that I could possibly use, because honestly, I find calculus completely confounding. There is a pretty good article about it on interestingengineering.com, though, by one Kathleen Villalas. Not sure how to say that name. And even outside of the snack industry, the hyperbolic paraboloid is quite a useful shape. It's used in architecture to give us some really impressive buildings. If you've ever seen Canada's Saddle Dome or England's Velodrome or Sweden's Scandinavium, you have seen the hyperbolic paraboloid in action. I actually wonder whether the designers of the Pringle shape were influenced by the Scandinavium arena, because it was designed in the late 40s as like an architectural competition and was the subject of a whole bunch of news due to all of these financing issues. Anyway.
Interesting. Very possible. I mean, I love that a lot of times when we do these episodes like this, it's scientists that come in and make the Pringles chip.
Yeah. Like,
it's fascinating.
Oh, love it. And yeah. Oh gosh, it's a really, really cool like architectural rabbit hole if you want to fall down one. Because similar principles are also applied in the wider category of roof types called shell roofs, which are these kind of swooping, curved roofs encompassing cavernous interiors, like the Sydney Opera House or the Great Court at the British Museum, or even the Dome of the Pantheon. So yeah.
Oh yeah.
And that can that the chips come in helps too. Traditionally, this is a very complex piece of disposable containerhood. It's a cardboard tube stabilized by a hard metal base, then lined on the inside with foil to prevent moisture from getting in, keeping the chips crispy, and topped with a metal tear-off lid inside of a stabilizing, resealable plastic cap that makes a fun pop when you take it off, hence that commercial slogan. And further, when the chips are put in, the air is sucked out to prevent deterioration and, yeah, give you that pop. Those cans come in standard, mini, and mega. There's little plastic snack stacks, too. And the flavors. So these differ from area to area. Right now, here in the U.S., the lineup across a couple different types of chips, you've got original, barbecue, ranch, sour cream and onion, jalapeno, roasted jalapeno, tangy barbecue, applewood smoked cheddar, cheddar cheese, scorchin', chili and lime, scorchin' barbecue and scorchin' cheddar, dill pickle, salt and vinegar, parmesan and roasted garlic, rotisserie chicken, honey mustard, Memphis barbecue, buffalo ranch, and my personal favorite in terms of saying names into a microphone, Wendy's Baconator.
The Wendy's Baconator Pringle.
Yep.
Will innovation never cease?
Oh, wow. I laughed out loud. So much that I startled my cat. When I read that on the internet, it's great. Girl. There's like a big like Wendy's sign on the can. It's really like a nice photograph of one. It's pretty epic. But yeah.
I mean, the Baconator is epic.
It wouldn't be called the Baconator if it were not.
Exactly. Exactly.
Truth in advertising. There are lots of discontinued flavors, though. Or maybe these aren't discontinued. I'm not entirely sure. I didn't personally fact check every single one of these. There was definitely a white chocolate one at some point. All of these different types of barbecue, I found like a smoky barbecue, like a sweet and tangy barbecue. I'm not sure how many iterations of barbecue they've been through. There was a one for cheesy cheese.
What?
I don't understand what it means.
Cheesy cheese?
Cheesy cheese. Salt and seaweed, hot and spicy, bacon, cinnamon and sugar. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I recommend it. There's definitely like shrimp. Prawn
Ooh,
flavor?
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, I love a shrimpy chip. Oh, gosh. Yeah, I'll try that.
I highly recommend going to look up all their past flavors because you will be shocked. Shocked, I say.
Yeah. And apparently, I found this article on The Week that claims that putting your Pringles in the fridge is heckin' delicious.
Huh.
I don't know. Couldn't help you. Sure. I haven't tried it. I'm just reporting.
Well, what about the nutrition?
Well, they're chips.
Yep.
They're deep fried. I mean, you know, there are some that are sold that are lighter in salt and stuff. There are some that are lighter in oil related calories, but you know, it's a read your product labels. Eat a vegetable.
We believe in you.
We believe in you. Absolutely. We do.
We do have some numbers for you.
Uh-huh.
Pringles are sold in over 140 countries, and according to Chris Hood of Kellogg Europe, 2/3 of Pringles sales occur outside of the United States today.
Yeah, 3 million cans a day are made across Europe alone.
Yeah, and they make a lot of money. Like, some of the figures I saw, we're going to go over some of them in the history bit.
Yeah.
I found hard to believe, but that's what, I guess, that's what.
Yeah.
People like Pringles?
I think they are just a bigger deal outside of the United States than they are here now. So I want to report in.
Y'all
from outside the US, like, let us know what your emotion about Pringles is, because I don't know, like, to me, like, it's slightly old-fashioned.
Yeah.
Like it's sort of a nostalgic thing, like, from my childhood, but not like the first thing that I think of when I think of, like, oh man, I want a delicious snack chip.
Right. Yeah. I feel like Pringles are a very specific and rare occurring mood in my case.
Yeah. It's sort of kitschy. It's got this kitsch factor.
Yes, for sure. For sure. And yeah, there have been over 100 flavors. One place I said over 140, possibly.
Wow. Oh. Wow.
Yeah. So I just highly recommend looking that up. I really do. And the history. My goodness, the history.
Oh, it's so cool. And we're going to get into it as soon as we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So, Pringles were invented in 1968 as an answer for Procter & Gamble's call for the perfect potato chip. So, after years of customer complaints about broken chips, stale chips, the company turned to Frederick Bauer, a PhD in organic chemistry and a one-time aviation physiologist in the Navy.
Love it.
I know. And Vic Mills, the inventor of the disposable diaper in 1956, asking for their help. So what they needed to solve was the problem of breakage of the delicate chips and the staleness. Yeah, because once chips are exposed to air, they can go stale pretty quickly. So these two combined water, sugar, oil, salt, and dehydrated potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And they use something like a cookie cutter to make uniform shapes and weights, the hyperbolic paraboloid shape.
Uh-huh.
And they believed that if these chips were stacked, it would decrease the risk of breakage. Problem, though.
Problem?
Problem? The chips tasted terribly. So close. So Procter & Gamble shelved the project until the mid-60s. And they were like, yeah, no, let's revisit this. And the recipe was revamped, a mix of potatoes, rice, wheat, and corn. The same cookie cutter process was used for uniformity, and it was a success. But what about the staleness issue?
Ah.
In 1966, Bauer came up with a new design for Procter & Gamble to stack Pringles more uniformly and with less breakage in a vacuum-sealed tennis-looking can.
Yeah,
to stave off staleness at the now iconic Pringles can. Or Pringles tube? Can? Tube?
Yeah, it's, know. You know, sure, both.
Either. Both. Top-of-the-line technology was used to ensure the chips would fit in the aluminum-coated aerodynamic can. I saw something about, like, the supercomputers they were using to do this. Like, really went all out. And Bauer was so proud of his work on this design that when he died in 2008, his ashes were buried in a Pringles can. At first, his kids thought he was joking about this, but the joke kept coming up. And according to the oldest son, they stopped at a pharmacy on the way to the burial. And after a brief argument between his siblings, they settled on the original flavor can for their father. They're debating what flavor shall we bury him in? Original.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. While the can is it's well-loved now, I would say. It's, like you said, it's got kind of a kitsch factor.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone took to it when it first appeared on the shelves in the 60s. According to the founder of supermarketguru.com, Phil Limpert, people resented it. You gave up the fun of eating potato chips, looking for the big ones, the small ones, the one shaped like Elvis. I found that hilarious. People are so funny. But it is true. There is something kind of fun about, like, I found the perfect huge Dorito chip, unbroken. Like,
yeah.
You feel like you've uncovered something real special.
You do.
Yeah, you do. Bauer also came up with something he called Cold Snap, by the way, which was a freeze-dried ice cream product that you would just add milk to. However, the Pringles can was a much bigger success. Pringles was a much bigger success overall. And this is even though Cold Snap had a future CEO of Microsoft on its board. Yeah, and the can went on to inspire many more innovations in packaging. There was a really cool timeline of, like, after Pringles tried this wacky experiment, how many other new designs of snack products in particular kind of followed after that. Yeah. But this did take years of innovating. And after that, Pringles hit the shelves in Evansville, Indiana in 1968. Allegedly, the company called them Pringles Newfangled Potato Chips.
Love it.
I know. That's perfect. And the mascot, Julius Pringle, was there from the beginning. He has changed throughout the years, but he's been there generally since the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
By the 1970s, Pringles were mostly available throughout the United States, but the flavor was still kind of lacking. The taste wasn't quite there. It took customers until about the 1980s until they warmed up to Pringles. Was it the commercial with the shirtless Brad Pitt in the 80s that did it?
I do not remember this commercial.
Oh, you should watch it. It's quite epic. The fever for the flavor of Pringles ad campaign that it was part of. The revamping of the mascot. One of many that would occur. Mysteries. History. But Pringles were there to stay. Now, where does the name come from? No one seems to know. Yeah, but legends abound. One prominent one is that the company wanted the name to begin with a P for potato chip, and they started flipping through the address book or the phone book or something until they found an address for Pringle Drive, and they liked the ring of it, and so they went with Pringles. Another story goes that the name comes from New York inventor Mark Pringle, who in 1937 patented a device that helped standardize the slicing and processing of potatoes. He hoped it would allow for a, quote, food product in wafer form of such uniformity in size, weight, and shape that can be economically packaged in a very compact manner so as to exclude any appreciable quantity of air, which does sound very much like what Pringles was going for.
Yeah, yeah.
Procter & Gamble even referenced his work in a patent of their own in 1969.
Wow.
Uh-huh. Another wow. Sci-fi author and combat engineer during the Korean War, Gene Wolfe, innovated, quote, a means of frying molded potato shingles before they dropped onto a conveyor belt for Procter & Gamble that is still used to make Pringles to this day. And he's, like, huge in the sci-fi world. I personally didn't recognize his stuff, but, like, he's a big deal, so.
Yeah, I'm not, it's not ringing a bell off the top of my head, but I believe you.
Well, thank you. And you can believe the many other articles that referenced it. According to Wolf, a German inventor actually came up with this whole idea, and Wolf developed it. It's kind of a funny quote, because he's like, Well, I didn't invent it. It was this German guy I don't remember the name of, but I developed it. Cool.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Perhaps strangely enough, Pringles were not the only pressed potato-based chips on the market when they came out. General Mills actually beat them by a year, premiering their Chippos, new-fashioned potato chips, in 1967.
Oh, that's a solid name.
So. Right? Chippos?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
New-fashioned potato chip.
Yeah, these were pressed into like a waffle fry kind of design, like a fine waffle design, and they did not benefit from the tube. They were sold in sleeves inside boxes. Not sure how long the product lasted on the market.
Ah, alas.
Mm-hmm.
But now we arrive at the infamous crisp versus chip debate.
Yes, and here enters the Potato Chip Institute.
Dun, dun, dun.
This is a manufacturer's organization or association, which has since become the Snack Food Association. And they filed suit against Procter & Gamble. They were like, only 42% potato! Not enough potato to call yourself a potato chip! They went after Chippos, too.
Poor Chippos.
I know.
Poor Chippos. In 1975, after complaints from potato chip manufacturers, the FDA concluded that Pringles could not officially be called, quote, potato chips, because they are made of dehydrated potatoes as opposed to thin slices of fried potatoes.
Mm.
Not enough potato! The FDA did give them a little bit of wiggle room, as long as the company used a type, like a font type that was no less than half that of the largest type on the label.
Oh.
They could call them, quote, potato chips made from dried potatoes. But the company was like, nah, we good. We're going to call them crisp. We're going to stick with the crisp. And this is not even, I totally forgot about the whole chips versus crisp linguistic thing.
Yeah, so, yeah, because this comes back later on because, like I said near the top, crisps is the term for what we call potato chips here in the U.S. and other places. So,
yeah.
At any rate, General Mills did try pressed chips again with the brand Mrs. Bumby's potato chips in the 1970s. This one was a hyperbolic paraboloid. It was sold in this ring-shaped container. It looks sort of like when you get those like frozen shrimp cocktails at the supermarket.
Yeah.
It sort of looks like that container.
That seems
so. It was like a ring. It was a ring of chips. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Planters also came out with a wavy version of a saddle-shaped chip in a tube sometime during that decade. I think either the 70s or the 80s. I couldn't track down a whole lot of information about it.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah.
The patent for Pringles was filed in 1976, and it listed Alexander Lipa as the inventor. He gets a lot of credit for improving the taste and essentially, I guess, making them more edible. And potentially, that's why they took off in the 80s. Maybe it wasn't shirtless Brad Pitt. I don't know. The patent read, quote, a potato chip product and process wherein a dough is prepared from dehydrated cooked potatoes and water and subsequently fried. Beginning in 1995, the company expanded into international markets and also the flavors they offered. Oh, they expanded so much in that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, things like prawn and blueberry. By the end of the 1990s, Pringles was Procter & Gamble's biggest brand. According to some sources, Pringles was earning an annual $1 billion for Procter & Gamble by this time. Like, I was trying to break that number down. I was like, are they saying the snack market? Like, did Pringles just up their snack revenue? Like, or is this all Pringles money?
All Pringles money. Yeah.
That's wild. This is also, this decade is when the slogan, once you pop, you just can't stop, entered our pop culture lexicon. And apparently, the 90s TV show Allie McBeal, in it, Allie got in a fight in a grocery store over Pringles.
Huh. I never really watched the show. I couldn't, can neither confirm nor deny.
I didn't either, but I still know about the dancing baby. Don't know about the Pringles, though. Alas.
We'll have to try to find the clip on YouTube or something. In 2004, Pringles and several brands teamed up to produce this product called Pringles Prints. And these were these Pringles that had printed on them, like co-branded, sponsored messages or like trivia questions. They paired up with The Incredibles, Daytona 500, Trivial Pursuit Jr., and Guinness World Records to produce these. Through the mediation of this company called Shaky Egg Communications, and their website talks about this, and it is some of the most amazing marketing language I've ever read in my entire existence. I would like to quote it for you briefly.
Oh,
okay. So it says, Chips, now media vehicle. With a Pringles Prints program, the brand was able to deliver more than just simple on-pack exposure to their partners, and Stafford exploited this fact on behalf of Pringles. The potato chip became a media vehicle, which can deliver hundreds of millions of impressions in a promotion.
A media vehicle? That is impressive, astounding, a delight.
I just both love and hate equally deeply everything about that. I'm like, wow, I feel like that's something that I could have very easily said in a meeting at some point in my life.
A media vehicle. Was it you who wrote that, Lauren? Admit it. Come clean.
Oh, alas, alack, it was not.
I can't believe, okay, this is like, I know I talk about I Still Know What You Did Last Summer a lot, and it's really weird, but I think about it quite often.
Okay,
and
all right.
Yeah, there's a scene where Jennifer Love Hewitt is singing karaoke, and the karaoke machine, she's singing I Will Survive, and then uh-huh. the lyrics change to like, I'm going to kill you.
Oh.
What if you open your media vehicle chip? And you get this murderous message. Why didn't they make a movie about that? That would have been a real media vehicle.
Wow. I'm trying to think. Yeah. Like we're really going to have to set a horror movie like in 2004.
Specifically. Yes.
And like go back and have this be a plot point.
Oh, I would love that so much. I love movies. Like, I just watched You've Got Mail recently. I love movies that have, like, only one time they could have existed.
Yeah, and that's it. Just the one. Just that one. Uh-huh.
And if you weren't around during that time, like, the jokes are going over your
it's
head, you might still enjoy it.
Confounding, yeah.
But it's not making any sense to you. I do love that type of movie, so I'm in.
Okay, all right, cool. We'll start working on it. Oh, heck. As we've talked about in previous snack episodes, there is like a lot of research into making snack foods craveable. You can see the Cheetos episode for like a lot more on that. But basically, manufacturers are looking to build a snack that's like interesting enough to crave that you want more of it, but not so interesting that your brain like gets tired and wants you to stop eating it. So you're looking for like a good burst of quick fading flavor, a satisfying crunch, and a quick melt after chewing that makes you feel like you haven't eaten that much. You should definitely eat more.
Sounds like a dating profile for a snack. I think it'd be interesting, but not too
interesting. Don't be intimidating.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh my goodness. All right. About that crunch though. In 2005, a couple of psychology researchers by the names of Charles Spence and Massimiliano Zampini published this paper called The Role of Auditory Cues in Modulating the Perceived Crispness and Staleness of Potato Chips. All right. They published this in the Journal of Sensory Studies. And in the study, they sat study participants in front of microphones with Pringles to eat and headphones to wear. And then as they fed the sound of the crunching of the participants eating these chips, as they fed that sound from the mic through a computer back into the participants' headphones, they mucked around with it a little bit. So they found that when the sounds were modified so that the high frequency parts were amped up, or when the sounds in general were just louder, the participants rated the flavor of the chips being crisper and fresher.
Wow.
Wild. So cool. Our brains are mush. I love it. We can't trust anything that we sense.
A good crunch is very important.
It is. Apparently it is. They won the 2008 Ig Nobel Prize in Nutrition for that work, by the way. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Oh, but we must return because the crisp versus chip debate raged on. Yes. The British Court of Appeal decided in 2009 that Pringles qualified as potato crisp, which put them in the same category as potato chips and subject them to the same taxes. Procter & Gamble tried to argue about the level of, quote, potato-ness in their product, but a judge on the case decreed that there was, quote, more than enough potato content for it to be a reasonable view that it is made from potato. This was not good news for Procter & Gamble. The ruling meant they owed $160 million in back taxes and an annual $31 million in the following years.
Yes. It is true, Pringles was trying to evade taxes by arguing that their chips are not all that potato-y. In the UK, potato chips are categorized as a luxury food and are taxed as such, but snacks are categorized as a necessity and thus are not taxed. So this is why Pringles was like, no, 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 we're just a snack. And the UK was like, nah, you're a potato chip.
That's right. Or crisp, perhaps.
Well, yeah.
It is a chip. See? In 2011, Procter & Gamble sold Pringles to Diamond Foods, but the deal ultimately fell through. So in 2012, Kellogg's purchased Pringles from P&G.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but this.
Oh,
this,
yeah.
Okay. Technological marvels continue. In 2014, Pringles debuted a video gaming headset device that fed people chips, and it is called the Hunger Hammer.
Hunger Hammer.
The Hunger Hammer.
Hunger Hammer. Okay.
Let me describe it for you.
I know. Please do, because I haven't looked it up, and I'm depending on you for an explanation.
I'm ready. Okay. Imagine you're sitting and you're deep in your game, and you just don't have time to pause it or look away. You've got a huge headset, one of those big ones that cover your ears and block out all the sound. You've got the mouthpiece so you can talk to people. And then on the side, you have a sleek 3D printer printed holder for a mini tube of Pringles, which you set the tube of Pringles in, and a little robot arm lifts the Pringle and brings it to your mouth.
Wow.
Yes. The future is now. The future is now.
Oh.
The Hunger Hammer.
The Hunger Hammer. Mm. You've got two joysticks for a reason. You can't take one hand away to put a hand into the Pringles can. What if you get your hand stuck? Oh, my heck.
Oh.
Yeah.
Dangers abound.
Yeah.
You can lose the game, and no one wants that.
No.
The thing is, though, I think I've told this story on here before. I had that Cabbage Patch doll that ate things.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And I had to recall it because it would, like, eat your hair and stuff. I just worry that the robot arm, I don't know, malfunctions. I'm a little concerned. But I did really appreciate learning more about the Hunger Hammer.
Yeah.
If anyone has one.
Oh.
Oh, my goodness, right?
Oh. Please send video.
Yes.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Or just tell us about your experience. Either way.
Yes.
Well, everything else seems boring after that.
Mm.
But in 2019, Pringles Wavy debuted. It's a wavy chip. It's Pringles with waves in it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, before that, back in 2017, the UK Recycling Association named the Pringles can one of the two worst recycling nightmares in existence due to all of those different materials that it uses. In response, as of September of 2020, Kellogg's started releasing versions of a 90-ish percent paper can with a plastic interior instead of foil, lids made of recyclable plastic or paper. We have yet to see how they test out.
Yes, we shall see.
We shall. Earlier in 2020, Pringles teamed up with Rick and Morty to run a commercial during the Super Bowl. It focuses on their campaign encouraging consumers to stack multiple flavors of Pringles to create their own unique Pringles flavor experience.
Yeah. I forgot about that whole thing.
Yeah. It's a whole marketing campaign for sure. The video is real cute. I laughed.
Yeah.
I mean, in it, definitely Rick is like, oh, we're trapped in a Pringles commercial. I'm like, oh, this is very Rick and Morty. Yeah.
I wonder how many products, because I feel like a lot of the most recent specific branded products we've talked about do have sort of an aspect of children playing with them. Like if you think of like Pringles, you could make the duck lips. And then what were those called? Bugles. Put them on your fingers. Pretend you were a witch. Like, was that accidental or was somebody thinking of this? Yeah,
I do wonder. Well, the logo, the Mr. P face updated at the beginning of 2021.
Yep, John Oliver.
Yep. and I went just on a very brief Google during a few parts that were your parts, Annie, to find some of these magical other flavors of Pringles.
Mm-hmm.
Can we close out with a list?
Yes. Let's do it.
Okay. And this is by far not all of them that are out there. This is only, what, like 20? Okay. Cheeseburger, pecan pie, pumpkin pie spice, white chocolate peppermint, hot and spicy wonton, Las Vegas spare ribs, smoked salami, Philly cheesesteak, of course, paprika and ketchup. I don't know why I said of course about paprika. I'm not sure if that's, but ketchup, sure. Ketchup is an of course.
Yes.
This one I think is probably a poor translation, or at least an interesting translation. Old American Circus Funky Mustard.
Wow. I want to know everything about that.
Yep. Mozzarella sticks and marinara, bacon Caesar salad, Los Angeles street barbecue chicken, mayo potato, lemon sesame, curry, satay, and soft shell crab.
Soft shell crab. Hmm. I've got to know more about the Las Vegas spare ribs. Something about that not processing in my brain.
I think it's meaning to evoke like the buffets of Las Vegas.
Sure. But when I think of the buffets in Las Vegas, maybe I'm coming from a limited experience. It's not the ribs. The ribs are not what come to mind.
Yeah. Huh. I've never been.
Fascinating. Well, this has been a real roller coaster. A fun one, in fact.
Yes. We do have some listener mail for you.
We do, but first we have one more quick break for a word from our sponsor. And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with listener mail. Crunch.
Oh, I was doing a pop.
Oh, it's a crunch and pop.
Yeah, you know? Based on the hand gesture, I wasn't sure.
It could have been either or. It could have been either or. Honestly, I was still, during the commercial break, I was still distracted from the images of tubes Lauren was showing me, Pringles tubes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was sharing some of these. Anyway,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Annie has more questions about the Las Vegas spare ribs.
I have many questions now. I have many, many, many questions and no answers, but that sounds about right. Alicia wrote, I was listening to the Cornbread episode the other day and heard y'all discussing how you want to look into doing an episode on the industrialization of corn. And boy, do I have some research material for you. In my research into food culture, I came across the show The Chef's Table. One of the chefs discussed was Dan Barber, who is a farm-to-table pioneer that did a lot of work with the Cornell Cooperative Program. He wrote a book called The Third Plate. In this book, he divides his discussion on food into different sections. The introduction at the section entitled Soil discusses a little bit of the history of the industrialization of corn and how it led to the Dust Bowl.
Oh, no.
Oh.
I never really thought about the connection there, but industrialized corn production alters soil composition by taking much of the nutrients out while also having a shallow root system. That makes it pretty easy for the wind and the plains to blow around all the used up soil. How cool and tragic.
Wow. Oh, no. Yeah. I didn't even know about that connection when I suggested that it would be a terrifying episode. That's
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of things with corn that we're going to have to grapple with.
Ooh. Yay. But,
yeah, I mean, I agree. Cool and very, very tragic. Very tragic.
All right. All right. Reading homework, though. That's great. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Sam wrote, I'm catching up on the backlog of pods I didn't listen to in December because I went on staycation, and today I listened to the Olive episode. When you read the listener mail, my ears pricked at Hannah's mention of a lemon bush that grew enormous fruit. I immediately recognized that she was talking about a ponderosa lemon. They included the botanical name. I'm not going to try to read it. My grandmother had one. She grew in a huge pot so she could move it into the greenhouse in winter. Ponderosas are a cross of pomelo and citron, no actual lemon genes in them, and will grow into an actual tree, though they are slow growing. The fruits are truly ponderous, measuring 6 to 8 inches in diameter and weighing 2 to 4 pounds each. They have a thick citron-like rind, and the fruit is both seedy and juicy. The juice can be readily subbed for true lemon juice without any change in taste. Huh.
4 pounds? 4 pounds.
Ponderosa.
Wow.
Love it.
I love this. We've got another entry in the mysterious,
mysterious
huge
lemon.
Yes, the prodigious lemon, the prodigious citrus. This could be a mystery novel series.
It really could. It absolutely, the more we learn about it, the more I'm convinced that, that, yes, there needs to be a series of novels about this.
Yeah. Well, good on it, listeners. And thanks too much for both of these listeners for writing. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod, and we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.